This is KBOO Portland, where it's 10:30 in the a.m., and it's time for me to remind you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Darkside Cinema, open every night and featuring independent, foreign, and art house films. The Darkside is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com.
Okay, welcome to a very special edition of Film at 11. I'm DK Ohm, the host, and I'm here with Mona, who is going to help us interview Blitz Bazoule, a filmmaker and musician, and whose film, The Burial of Kodjo, is kicking off the Cascade African Film Festival.
Close.
The Cascade Festival of African Film. That's right. So, and you are originally from Ghana.
Yep.
When did you move to the United States?
When I moved after high school.
After high school.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, it's been a while.
Is it a multilingual country? In other words, when you were a kid, were you learning French, English?
No, not. We spoke multiple languages in Ghana. Obviously, and my family's from the northernmost part of Ghana.
Okay,
so
because it's a trading country. I mean, lots of shipping and import export. So those tend to become polyglot regions of a place. So anyway, yes. So but now you're living in Brooklyn, and you were making this movie. Besides being a musician, you've also made a short film. Tell us about the short film, Mona.
Well, I am really happy to say that this film is available on YouTube. It's Diasporadical Trilogia.
Yep.
And it is from 2016.
Yep.
And it is well worth the 17 or 18 minutes of your time. Believe me, I was left wishing it was longer, which rarely happens to me when it comes to film. And it tells a story, but it's very dreamlike.
Yep.
It has. It's interesting. It's very magical. And I want to talk to you about your storytelling. Being based in magical realism or the magical realism of your storytelling, because that's fascinating that you are drawn to that. But I urge everyone listening to, as soon as we're off the air, not now, to look this film up if you haven't seen it, because you will be a fan. It is stunning. It's beautiful. It is a trilogy. It's three short segments, very musically based. Tells the story of a person's journey.
Yep.
And it's really difficult to describe in some ways. It's very lyrical.
Yep.
Extremely musical. And not just because it's all your music. Yep. It has a feeling of music to it.
Yep.
And it has a dreamlike feeling too. So it's hard to describe, but well worth every moment of your time. And I would probably urge you to rewatch it just to pick up the nuances that you didn't catch the first time around. Do you want to talk about that film a little bit?
Diasporadical Trilogia was the first film. Well, the first short film that I directed alone. The first one I did was with Terrence Nance, who's a phenomenal filmmaker, was my roommate at the time. We made a short film called Native Son. And kind of how I've always seen film play into my life has been an extension of my musical world. Well, first I started as a visual artist, and that visual art kind of segued into music, which then segued into cinema. And it's kind of back now to a visual art space again for me.
Neat.
But for me, it's been great because it's allowed me to extend myself, not being limited by medium. And that's how my film world begun. And so after Native Son, I needed to do something by myself, and I took a huge chance. I went to Brazil, where I didn't speak Portuguese, but I figured I could work my way around there and figure out how to create this. The reason it's called Diasporadical Trilogia is the connection of Africans as they've been spread around,
right.
You know, the world, through, you know, of course, transatlantic slavery, but, you know, sometimes immigration as well. So, you know, figuring out these things that tie us together, the things that we've held on to and the things that we've left or lost in transition. And so, you know, making the first bit of it in Ghana, and then coming to Brooklyn, where I lived at the time, making the second piece. So the first one revolved around, you know, a period which is where Ghana's identity was born, 1960s, post, 57 specifically, post-colonization, mm-hmm. into independence. I've always been enamored by that era. You know, it's where I feel like there was this vision of what we were going to be.
And it's a great success story. It's one of the more stable, yep. of the African countries, and has a great cultural influence. For example, Idris Elba is originally born in Ghana, or just of heritage?
I think he's of heritage, yeah, okay. but he's both Sierra Leone and Ghanaian. I think,
yeah.
his mom,
oh, okay.
is Ghanaian.
Okay. Yeah.
But without a doubt, I mean, you know, Ghana was the first sub-Saharan country to gain independence. Mm. And that was significant because that changed the trajectory of the entire continent. People who hadn't thought about independence as an option finally saw a group of people who had achieved it. And so, you know, Kwame Nkrumah being our center, created this very Pan-Africanist ideology. And up till today, I mean, Ghana just had the Year of Return celebration, which marked exactly 400 years since the first Africans were taken and enslaved. Wow. 1619 and 2019 was the Year of Return, and it really attracted millions of people from across the diaspora. So that was the first impetus to make this work, was just create this world in which I loved and I really saw the entire continent, not just Ghana, as, you know, a very inspired people post independence, right? And so that was the first part, and it dealt with love and elements of that. And then the one in Brooklyn was about this little girl who, you know, her father is an immigrant in this country and is undocumented, and what that means for this child who is born in this country, but also carries with her, you know, the elements and the spiritual leanings of the continent of Africa. So that was another piece that we created. And the last one was in Brazil. And kind of what I did with these stories was I didn't write until I got there.
Mm.
So I didn't write till I was in Ghana. I didn't write till I got back to New York. And I didn't write till I got to Bahia in Brazil. And so I just always felt I'll take the pulse of what's happening. And at the time, you know, undocumented immigrants here were, you know, pretty much becoming the scourge. And in Brazil, what was happening at the time was that, you know, gentrification, we talked a little bit about that prior to going on the air, the changes that are happening, that was happening at an alarming rate in Bahia, where these very historical buildings were being torn down. And a lot of times they'll come and tell the people it's unsafe to be in, which almost always was a lie.
Right.
And they'll move them out and they'll tear them down and build these really expensive buildings. So I created a last piece that was kind of surrounding that. But the through line of all of that was, you know, African spirituality and how that is something that's carried across no matter where Africans have been dispersed to. In Brazil, for instance, it was incredible to see Candomblé religion practiced so openly in a way that I haven't seen happen anywhere else in the world, because we know the stigma and scourge that, you know, has been attached to anything that's traditional African.
Mm.
So that was really important. So that's really what the trilogy is about, was using this woman's story and taking her in different stages, but on different continents. So as in Brooklyn, she's a little girl. In Ghana, she's a young lady. In Bahia, she's a middle-aged older woman. Mm. And just kind of seeing what her life is in these places.
And you seem to be attracted to telling stories through the eyes of, at least in this movie also, children.
Absolutely.
And then in a portion of that film. So you just naturally gravitate towards that kind of innocence or sensibility? Or?
Well, it's twofold. It's women and children for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the perspective of women seldomly, and regardless of culture, is seldomly centered.
Yeah.
And so that's always been a piece for me, is making sure that, you know, my leads are strong women. That's just how it's always been.
Yeah.
Children, obviously, because they see the world in an unbiased way, and it's truth. And both come from my grandmother's stories.
Oh.
I mean, she was, you know, I say she was the best storyteller I'd ever come across. You know, her ability to, you know, have these stories that were constantly growing. You know, they were never linear. They never had an end per se. There were, you know, when I was young, we had moved to an area of Ghana that was just kind of being included into the city. So it took a while for electricity to get there and water and stuff. So while we were there, you know, at 6 p.m., your day is pretty much winding down. So my grandmother was really the HBO, Netflix, Showtime of the time, you know, and listening to her stories and how those stories will continue to weave week after week, creating new characters taking different sensibilities, becoming inanimate objects, becoming birds, becoming trees, becoming, you know, and it's, you know, that's how I've understood story, and that's always been the through line of my work, is there's something peculiar about African storytelling that deals a lot with the unseen, and it's a little bit in our literature, not enough of it is in our cinema.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit in our music as well. You can hear African music and immediately identify there's a third force at work.
Mm-hmm.
But cinema has been peculiar, and I think a lot of it is because of how colonized the medium has been and how expensive it was to get into for so long. And I think it's just beginning because the tools are becoming accessible, and I could go to Ghana with a small point and shoot camera and shoot something that's on YouTube right now, and it's accessible.
Right.
And so those have kind of changed the way that we are, our relationship to cinema, and I'm beginning to see more and more films take a more bold, more African approach, if there's such a thing.
And the follow-up with what Mona was interested in, the magical realism, that is linked to the sensibility of the country, the land, the people, and the religion also lends itself?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm always a bit cautious to, in a way, put in a box.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
You know. So it has elements of magic and it has elements of realism, but there's also so many things going on. And coming from music, I know how genre, like boxing, is very necessary in the Western world.
And it stifles the organic interaction of all these elements.
Exactly. I also understand why.
Yeah.
Because it allows people to gather around an idea. But I think the ideas are a lot more fluid than that, and we don't yet even know what we're doing in terms of, you know, the elements that we're evoking in our work. I do know that it's connected to a very long-standing tradition of storytelling, which doesn't have an end, right? It isn't just because the medium changes doesn't mean the story changes. So the stories that are told by our grandmothers and our mothers become the books that are written and, you know, end up in libraries, become the films that are adapted out of these books, but the story never changes, right? And so it's our jobs to figure out what is the through line and what is the thing that makes it, because again, I really believe that every people on this planet have an edge. And I always quote the late Dr. Toni Morrison, when she says, you know, I stood on the edge, stood on the border, claimed it as central, and forced the world to come over to me.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's every group of people have an edge. You know, everybody's lauding Bong Joon-ho's Parasite, and it's an incredible film, but it's a clear perspective. And if you've been watching Korean films, then none of this should come as a surprise,
right.
You know, but obviously the world chooses to stay on edges that are, you know, that I feel it feels artificial, and it's propped up artificially. And so, you know, my film is really about an edge.
Yeah.
It's really about pivoting on an edge and saying, this is who we are, and it's peculiar, and it's unique, and it belongs in the pantheon of cinema.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, so again, this is Film 11, DK Holm here with Mona, and we're talking to Blitz Bozawule. Thank you.
Blitz the Ambassador.
Blitz the Ambassador. And Rana, I want to turn to you and have you discuss this is the 30th iteration of the Cascade Festival of African Film. And how did it last this long? This is fantastic that it's... and you've got this delightful, impressive booklet and about 15 films, I'm guessing?
Showing 30 films 30 for the 30th.
Gotcha. So yes. What else is on tap for the movies? Do you have any titles? Well, how do you find the titles? What kind of research do you go through?
Well, we have a group that scouts films, and we go to other film festivals around the country, and then outside the country, we go to the continent of Africa for
a few of
them, and up into Canada, and then around the United States. We scout, and then we put our ears to the ground and listen for suggestions by people also, and then discuss with distributors or the filmmakers themselves to see if we can all take a look at them, and then we decide as a group, a smaller group,
right,
that decide, and we fight for our favorites,
and
come out with 30 fabulous films this year.
And it represents, you know, many, many, many of the countries.
Every region of Africa.
Yes.
And we're pretty aware that we want to try to at least serve every region of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And many genre also. I mean, we have some sort of quiet mystery thrillers, and comedy, and, you know, we just a whole range of feature films. And then we have Thursday night documentary films. Wednesday we've added this year, and that's in honor of the Film Foundation's 30th anniversary. And under that is Martin Scorsese's World Cinema Project.
Oh yeah.
And he has decided that to start an African film heritage series, so that some of the earliest African films that have been lost, some of them damaged, that he's remastered them, most of them along with the directors. And so we're showing four of those on Wednesday night. So we've added Wednesday nights this year.
Excellent.
So African Film Heritage Series on Wednesday evenings, Thursday evenings, documentaries, and then Fridays and Saturdays, we show feature films. We also have a live performance this year, too, that we're really excited about, and that's on February 8th and 9th. A Somali woman is doing a live theater piece that's multimedia, so there's live performance, puppetry, film, everything. And it's called How to Have Fun in a Civil War, and it's about her memories of being a child in Somalia during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
But it's appropriate for age 6 on up, she says. Well. So it seems like it should be interesting. And it's at 1 o'clock on Saturday, February 8th, and at 5 o'clock Sunday, February 9th.
Oh, good. Okay. Now, I hope the phrase Nollywood isn't an insult, because it does represent that Ghana is one of the premier film-making countries in Africa, and also poster-making. Oh, am I wrong?
Nigeria.
Oh, is it Nigeria?
Nollywood.
Oh, okay.
Right,
okay.
Right.
But there's... The two countries do often collaborate with each other.
For sure.
So I was half right,
okay.
or half wrong, depending on how you like your glasses filled. But that's not a denigrating term, is it?
No, I mean it's Nigerians came up with that. You know, okay. And they've used it as a platform. We also got to remember cinema as a means of seeing oneself at its basic core. I mean, we can discuss merits and artistic merits and demerits. None of that matters. I think people want to see themselves and want to see what's familiar to them and want to see their environments. And that was what birthed Nollywood as a concept. Mm-hmm. That's what birthed Bollywood as a concept.
Right.
You know, just people saying to themselves, you know, cinema is a means of seeing oneself. And it's been incredible just from the employment standpoint, number of people who have gained employment through that and the massive scale at which these films are made. And they're getting better every year.
Yeah.
And I think it's a force to reckon with. Indeed.
Now, did you find that hard to make a feature film? Maybe what I want to ask is, what is something that you discovered in the process of making this film that you didn't anticipate? Like, oh boy, I didn't guess this was going to happen.
Everything.
No.
Yeah. I mean, you know, making a short is hard.
Right.
Making a feature is impossible. I mean, even in the United States with all the resources, I mean, you have to be the level of brave that borders on stupid to really commit to not just yourself, you know, just taking 40 other people and putting them through torturous hell for sometimes months at a time.
Yeah, and it seems like so much of filmmaking, the actual physical production of the film, has very little to do with our concept of filmmaking.
No.
It's budgeting, it's rounding up money,
all the
wooing people.
Absolutely. And for me, that was the challenge. But also remember, making a film that is quintessentially African is also a very foreign concept.
Yes.
So, first of all, we all know how good old American capitalism works. It's show me the proof. Show me someone else who's done it and made that kind of money. And it's hard to do if we've never gotten that kind of money to do this kind of work. So that was my biggest first hurdle. And I realized very quickly that I was wasting my time trying to convince people of the merits of a story that needed to be told when they didn't see it as viable. And so, you know, I funded the production myself. You know, thankfully, as a musician, I've not only have access to thousands of people around the world, I also have a means of touring and making money. So yeah. I raised money to shoot it. When I run out of money for post-production, I did a Kickstarter, raised $78,000, and was able to finish it with it. But what that gave me was autonomy, and I was able to create the film exactly as I wanted to. I had no one in the room that for 1 minute doubted. And I think that's something else that we don't quite think about. It's half your time spent fighting people who should be helping you do your work. And that's how a lot of good ideas fail. And so I didn't want that. I wanted only people who would help. And I found them. And the film's made history.
Yeah.
For a Ghanaian film, but for an African film. The reach and for the level of acclaim. Again, for a film that had no business competing at all. You know, but I also would be remiss if I didn't mention the great Ava DuVernay.
Oh yeah.
Who stepped in when our film was done and had nowhere to go with it and was turned down by most film festivals. She showed up and said this work needed to be seen. She pushed it to the next level, and that's how we ended up on a very famous streaming site who will not be named right now, because we need people to see the film in theaters. And that's another thing is just also making, you know, as filmmakers, we make films and with the hopes that it'll be seen in the way that we imagined it. I understand that everybody can't and everybody won't. I understand that some people will watch it on their phones, and that too is fine. I don't get in the weeds of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think however you see the film, it'll have the same impact. However, I do feel like there's something about being in a room uninterrupted for 90 minutes.
Experiencing the film's time, not your own time.
Not your time. And that's a magical thing
that
if you can for it. You should never skip.
Remind us of the show times tonight. This is Friday, the January 31st, and it's at the Hollywood.
It's at the Hollywood Theater on Sandy Boulevard. We have a 6:30 film showing and then a 9:30. After each film, we'll have a talk back by Blitz Bazzoli, and so we hope people will come for that. The rest of the films are at PCC, Cascade Community College. Our closing night film is at Hollywood also.
Okay. What's that one?
That's called Life is Fair. It's an Eritrean film by a young woman, and it's very fun.
Oh, good. Will she be there?
She'll be there. Excellent. Also. Yes, tonight, definitely come. 6:30, if you don't get in for the first because it fills up quickly, go have dinner nearby and then come back for the 9:30 showing, and we'll make sure you get in.
And you'll be discussing the film, taking questions from the audience.
Absolutely.
Will you have an instrument with you, or
no?
You're gonna it's talking.
It's all verbal.
Okay. All right. Yeah. This is fantastic. So we've been Mona. Do you have any last bits of praise or questions?
I think you covered everything. Speaking of streaming services, the world has had such a Hollywood-centric vision of film and how to make a movie for over 100 years.
Yep.
Of course, France had its film industry, and Britain does too, and Bollywood, as we were saying. But Africa, I think most Americans don't realize how, first of all, most Americans have no idea about how just huge Africa is.
Period.
Just, like, it's crazy.
Yep.
So the perspective of just the size of the continent and then the size of each country, I think, is kind of really mind-boggling for a lot of people, unfortunately. But I've noticed on streaming services how many African films are showing up now that were never available before. And even myself, as a film person, I've been stunned by the volume of product there is. So how do you feel about that, the rise just of Africa as a filmmaking continent that's getting recognized now?
Yeah, well, it's amazing, but it's also pathetic.
Right.
You know, the world can exist in such silos. It is a shame. I mean, if you think about how we're socialized and how much we're able to grow when you meet someone of a different opinion and especially experience their art. I mean, think about the world without African music in its multiple forms.
Which would think of a world without music.
That's
right,
it.
Exactly.
Right? I don't only mean continental African music, I mean African music across the diaspora, right? Think about how enriched our lives are because jazz exists, because reggae exists, because funk exists, because Afrobeat exists, right? Soukous, all these sounds. And then think about the visual equivalent of that, you know?
Yeah,
and think about how much the world has lost for simply being so willfully ignorant of the fact that continental Africans and Africans around the diaspora have a unique perspective and take. And I think, again, a lot of it is based on the colonization of the medium. And the decolonization of the medium is beginning now to help these works proliferate. I mean, if you see Usman Simbene's work, you see a completely different, unique take on not just the medium, but even how the framing of the work. I mean, it's the same when you watch a Kurosawa film, right? Or a Bong Joon-ho film, you know? Or any film that's from around the world. You know, it's and America's part of the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's you find that perspectives differ. And because perspectives differ, they offer insights that you may not be privy to based on your socialization or geographic location.
Exactly.
And so that for me is a marvel, and I'm getting excited that now that we have that opportunity.
That's fantastic. Yeah, so keeps in mind there's no one Africa It's no one African film.
Absolutely.
It's a multi
myriad.
Multiform.
Absolutely.
So this has been fantastic.
I just feel like I could ask you questions for hours. Fascinating, so interesting to talk with. Just grateful that you were able to come here.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
Yes, and tonight it's at the Hollywood Theater.
Hollywood Theater, 6:30 and 9:30 showings. I will be there.
Excellent.
Excited to be in Portland. It's fantastic. It's always fun.
Okay, thank you for being here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of When We Cry on Sunday, February 2nd from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Siren Theater in Portland. When We Cry takes a look into the pain of a Black woman, seeking to bring awareness to the effects women endure when they remain silent. Again, that's When We Cry on Sunday, February 2nd from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Siren Theater, 315 Northwest Davis Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. It's just after 11, and now we get to hear Mr. Jones's Neighborhood on your community radio.